I am having an extraordinary day, and I hope to share it with you here in the Situation Update podcast. And today it's for Wednesday, February 23rd, 2022. I forgot to mention yesterday when I said, remember, it's 2/22/2022. And we thought, oh, that's six twos. Actually, it's seven because it was also Tuesday. So that's another two. I know, lame, right? But there were seven twos yesterday. Okay, but for whatever reason, that day of seven twos turned out to be some extraordinary things happened to me. I'm going to share some of that with you. Let me give you a quick table of contents because I know sometimes these podcasts get a little lengthy. First, I'm going to cover a powerful dream message that came to me in the moments right as I was awakening yesterday morning. And then I mentioned the symbolism of what happened. I'll share it with you to someone who knows a lot about ancient civilizations and mythology and so on. In fact, he was the star of the ancient civilization show for many years, and he was able to give me some interpretation. I'm going to share that with you. And then also today we're going to cover what that person calls the consciousness grenade that humanity has been struck with, a consciousness grenade, like an explosion of consciousness, and the revelations of the globalist theater. And I'll explain all that today, but a lot of people are figuring it out. It's like, whoa, it looks like this is a Wizard of Oz scenario. The governments are acting like the man behind the curtain trying to scare everybody. Ooh, another virus. Be afraid, everybody. Be afraid so we can control you. We're going to cover that. We're also going to cover the possible collapse of the global energy supply due to sanctions against Russia. And I don't know if you heard this today, Germany canceled the Nord Stream 2 pipeline, which of course is used to pipe natural gas to Germany from Russia because Germany uses a lot of natural gas and Russia produces a lot of natural gas. And somehow the German people have come to the conclusion that I don't know if they just beat themselves in the face with a hammer that they're winning somehow. It's like cracking their own skulls with sledgehammers and saying, we're winning and Russians are losing. And so, by the way, I took a shot at some online translation into German, and I think this is the new phrase of the German so-called leaders who have cut off the energy supply to Germany now from Russia, meaning that the Germans are going to freeze, the Germans are going to have double energy prices, Germans are going to have a lack of fertilizer because it comes from natural gas and other hydrocarbons, and then they think they're winning. So here it is. Wir freuen ein! Wir haben keinen Dünger. Wir gewinnen. Gewinnen. I'm not sure how to pronounce that, but what that is supposed to mean, and again, I don't speak German, so is that wir frieren ein means we're freezing. Wir haben keinen Dünger means we have no fertilizer. And wir gewinnen means we're winning. So take that, Russians. Take that, Putin. We will freeze and starve in Germany, and we are the winners. It's like, no wonder the German people hate Angela Merkel, right? Anyway, we might cover that in a little more detail. Also then today, new threats against the global food supply because of the situation with Ukraine and NATO aggression into the, you know, expansion into the region. And now Russia recognizing the independent statehood status, or I don't know, republic status. And, what is it? Donetsk and Luhansk, I think. Again, I don't know how to pronounce those correctly, but whatever. And, reportedly Putin has moved as many as 10,000 troops into those breakaway regions at the request of those countries. And, these are called peacekeepers, which I think is so hilarious because, you know, that's the trick that NATO countries always pull. You know, when they want to invade somewhere, like, oh, they're invading Somalia or they're invading the Sudan or wherever. It's like, oh, it's not an invasion. We just have peacekeeping forces. You know, that's the excuse that America uses. So to hear Putin using the same language is kind of hilarious. It's like, oh no, it's not an invasion. They're just peacekeeping forces, just like your peacekeeping forces. Of course, when it comes to the United Nations peacekeeping forces, they are the brutal thugs and child traffickers and rapists. And, you know, they move into a country and they just start kidnapping children and women and selling them for, you know, obvious horrible things. And that's what the United Nations does all over the world. And everybody knows that, who's informed anyway. And by the way, it turns out it's UN troops pretending to be police in Canada. And we'll talk about that more as all that comes up. So yeah, all that's coming up here. Before we get started though, I want to play for you a 15-second video that is being called a genius moment from somewhere in Europe. I don't know if this is Spain or where. Someone says magnifico somewhere in this. So maybe it's Spain, maybe it's Italy. I'm not sure. But here it is, 15 seconds of mocking the globalist police state. Check this out.
Encore, 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 s'il te plaît, encore. C'est magnifique. Magnifique. Magnifique.
It truly is genius. I love it because this is part of how we defeat these lunatics, is just to mock them and to show their tyranny, you know, as they're marching along. They're marching. It's almost like a rap song. You know, it's, but it would be even better with a kazoo. You know, the kazoo is, it's like, this is whatever the most annoying instrument you could find. Just to mock these lunatics, these goons. We should do it. Seriously, we should do a rap song of like the globalist thugs in Ottawa who are pretending to be police, but we know you're not. That's why you're hiding your faces. That's why you're not speaking. You don't speak English or French for that matter. You're like United Nations goons. You're part of the empire. Hence the, well, I guess that was a bugle instrument, but nice job to whoever did that. Very effective. You know, seriously, what would be really funny is if somebody went out there in an actual stormtrooper costume, which you can buy because there are, you know, sci-fi conventions and so on. You can dress up like a stormtrooper. And what you should do is get yourself and three other friends, put on the stormtrooper outfits. Maybe you have one friend who wants to be Darth Vader. And then when the police come marching by, you just fall in line right behind them. As you have this hilarious mocking recording, this sarcastic, you know, and you're just marching along and let your other friends videotape that. You realize how viral that would be? Oh my God, that's the best idea yet. I mean, of this podcast. Well, it's early, so we'll see what happens. But wouldn't that, see, this is the secret, is mock them, show them. Pull the curtain back on the Wizard of Oz and show, you're no wizard. You're just this short little mad dude pulling levers, man. We're onto you. And that's how you do it. So everybody go out and rent some stormtrooper costumes. Fall into line with these lunatics, captured on video, upload it to Brighttown.com. Maybe we should do a contest or something. Like InfoWars has contests, like photobomb contests. Let me think about that. I'm not officially announcing a contest here, but I'm going to think about this. Maybe we can have a financial reward of some kind if somebody did. That would be the funniest thing. Okay, I know I got to move on here. Let me get to my the dream. Okay, let's do that next, and then we'll get to some of the other news. But wow, just wow. Okay, as you know, I've had a couple of really powerful episodes of Premonition in the last couple of years. And one of the most recent ones was about the island of Tonga, you know, super volcano explosion thing that happened, which actually wasn't exactly a volcano. It was augmented. But nevertheless, and you remember me sharing that 5 days before it happened, you know, we're talking about there would be water washing on the shores and vibration waves that spread across the planet and the soil would be replaced with water. Remember that? So I shared that with everybody publicly. I had a very surreal kind of dream just yesterday morning that it was not a premonition, not a prediction, but it's just raw symbolism. And so here it is, just quickly, that there was an epic battle with a satanic creature that was actually a gray slug-looking, Jabba the Hutt-looking thing, but it was gray, not the color of Jabba. What color is Jabba? He's kind of, isn't he more brownish or something? But anyway, this creature was gray in my dream. And then there were multiple people battling this satanic creature. And, the most prominent person, in my dream turned to this other person and said, "We need your energy, endless day." And he was referring to him as a kind of superhero named Endless Day. Like that was his name. And Endless Day then came up with these spheres of light, which were energy, and he passed them to the guy who was asking for them. And that guy, who was also kind of a superhero kind of being, then directed the energy and shot it out as a beam of light and destroyed the satanic slug creature. And so I don't know his name. That didn't come in the dream, but it was his voice that very specifically said, you know, "We need your energy, endless day." Okay. So this phrase, endless day, I woke up with this phrase like audibly in my mind as if I had just heard someone say it. And I was thinking, what? Endless day? Who's named Endless Day? Even superheroes, they're not named Endless Day. You know, they're named like Spider-Man and the Green Lantern. But Endless Day? Like, what does that even mean? And so the person who I know who has the most knowledge about cultural history, symbolism, and ancient civilizations is David Wilcock. And so I texted David and I said, "David, can you make any sense of this? What does endless day mean?" That's the first, I only told him that at first. I was like, "Endless day. What does that even mean?" Cause it came to me in a dream. And then, you know, he texted back. He said, "Oh my God." And he unloads this encyclopedia of information because that's David Wilcock. He's like a walking encyclopedia of all this knowledge about cultures and everything. And he says, "You know, the Mayan calendar is the fifth sun. It's the universe being bathed in the light of truth and the end of evil, the conquering of darkness," and on and on and on. I'm like, "Whoa, that's wild." And then after that, I told him, "And by the way, this character in the dream, Endless Day, came up with spheres of light, like light balls, like glowing balls of light. They were about the size of, I guess, soccer balls, but they didn't look like soccer balls. They look like glowing, sort of like resonating orange balls of light, basically, is the way I remember it. Kind of like a grid, like an orange grid, but glowing. And it seems to me there were two of them. And he passed these two balls of light over to the other guy. I guess it'd be like great balls of fire, you know? And then that guy threw them into the demon creature and destroyed evil. And then when I explained this to David, and he responded something like, "Oh, like no way, oh my God, that's even more significant, because you're talking about the spheres of energy and what these have to do with the history of ancient civilizations." And, you know, I'm not going to go into all the details, but I got to tell you, David knows his ancient cultures and civilizations very, very well. And it reminded me that he did a whole video series that's on my channel. It's called Moment of Truth. And if you go to Brighteon.com and you search for Moment of Truth, you'll see it's broken down into like, I don't know how many episodes. It was a lot of episodes, but you'll see episode 1, 2, 3, you know, ancient technologies and all these things. You should go back and watch some of those episodes. It's from a few months ago when we posted that and David did the editing himself. A lot of that stuff has come true since then. So seriously, go back and watch Moment of Truth. The whole, I think there's also a full version of the whole documentary just called Moment of Truth. And it's like 2.5 hours or maybe more. maybe it's like 3 hours. It's pretty lengthy, but go back and check some of that out because it's really talking about a lot of things we're seeing happen right now. So basically what David said to me is that, like, Mike, your dream is showing you the symbolism of how the people have the power to defeat Satan and to defeat evil and to bring the light of truth and freedom and illumination to the whole world. And that it's going to be the cooperation among the people, which is what happened in that little scene in the dream, where one person was the energy source, the other person could direct it as a weapon against evil. And it takes the cooperation among the people then to do this, to defeat this powerful, dominating, evil slug creature, which is globalism, right? It's the World Economic Foundation. Might as well have been like Klaus Schwab playing Jabba the Hutt. He's like, ooka, ooka, laka, yeah. You know, isn't that how he talks in Star Wars? I couldn't find an online translator for Jabba. So I'm just going from memory. It was a lot of like, ooka, ooga, solo. You know, remember that? But, so that's the interpretation of the dream. So then as I was continuing this conversation with David, and he doesn't mind me sharing this, by the way, I checked with him. Normally if I have private conversations with people that they want them to keep private, of course I keep it private, but he's totally fine sharing this because he said, you know, do you realize, Mike, that what just happened in Canada with the government coming out and admitting that, oh, we're going to steal your bank accounts. We're going to smash your windows. We're going to trample you with horses. We're going to hunt you down just for donating in a perfectly legal manner to a peaceful protest that violated no laws whatsoever. We're going to hunt you down and destroy your life. But by the government saying that, coming out and just showcasing that for the world to see, do you realize, David said, this is a consciousness grenade that has been dropped on humanity, a consciousness grenade, this massive explosion of awakening where people all over the world go, what? Governments are declaring war on us? Like, governments are going to loot our bank accounts when we've done nothing wrong other than donate 10 bucks to a convoy that was peaceful? They're going to loot our bank accounts? Governments are going to shut down our businesses? Governments are going to smash our windows, trample our grandmothers? Yeah. It's exactly what they're going to do. Because now the government thuggery is right out in the open. And we're going to talk about that in a second. But, you know, I forgot something about the concept of endless day from the dream. There's one more thing. Those of you who are Bible scholars will recognize this. Did you know in the Bible it mentions that the sun goes backwards? Yeah, I looked it up. It's a couple of places. I want to read this for you. Joshua chapter 10, I think it starts in verse 12. On the day that the Lord gave the Amorites over to the Israelites, Joshua spoke to the Lord in the presence of Israel. O sun, stand still over Gibeon. O moon, over the valley of Aijalon. And then verse 13, quote, so the sun stood still and the moon stopped until the nation took vengeance upon its enemies. Oh, so the sun stopped in the middle of the sky and delayed going down about a full day. There has been no day like it before or since when the Lord listened to the voice of a man because the Lord fought for Israel. So this is the Bible explaining that God, in effect, halted the motion of perhaps the earth, creating the illusion that the sun stopped in the sky, or, you know, the relative position of the sun in the sky stopped compared to the earth. There's another mention of this in Isaiah chapter 38, verse 8. And here it says, let's see. I will make the shadow cast by the sun go back the 10 steps it has gone down on the stairway of Ahaz. Basically, the stairway of Ahaz is a sundial, by the way. It's kind of a sundial, so they could tell the time of day. Like, you couldn't wear a wristwatch, had to actually watch the stairway. It's like, you know, what time is it? Well, it's like four stairs down. But anyway, so God said he's going to make the sun go back 10 steps. And then it continues, quote, so the sunlight went back the 10 steps it had gone down. There you go. So at least two places in the Bible that I'm aware of that would create the appearance, at least the appearance of an endless day, at least for that one day, or kind of maybe an extended day. But I found it fascinating that this concept of an endless day or days without nights is in fact repeated throughout cultural history, as I learned from David. And it's reflected in multiple different cultures, by the way, not just the Bible, but, you know, ancient Mayan and Aztec and other cultures around the world as well. Probably in Chinese culture. I haven't tried to look for that. It's probably reflected there. So there's this overall motif that darkness will be eliminated, and that the light of God and the light of truth will in fact radiate over the whole world and end the darkness. So obviously that's a very powerful metaphor for our time, especially since I think we are on the verge of defeating darkness on a global scale. Even though the hour seems really dark right now, I mean, obviously things are looking horrible in terms of freedom, right? And the thuggery of governments, as we're talking about, and the terrorism of governments, and the vaccine clot shots, and the mass murder by the medical system, and so on and so forth, and the censorship and all that. Yeah. But this is also the process that we go through in order to achieve then the defeat of darkness and the defeat of evil and the grand global awakening of the people, which is a kind of endless day, or what I've described before as, well, a couple of different ways, the new golden age for humanity that I believe is coming. And also I've used the phrase the abundance economy, which I think is also a very powerful description of where we are going when the suppression of technologies and the suppression of knowledge is finally lifted, because the evil, how shall we say this? The evil jailers who have built the mental prisons under which humanity now suffers, they're going to be defeated. And you got to understand that there are technologies and pieces of knowledge and processes all over the world that have been invented and even patented by probably hundreds of thousands of creative, amazing people over the last several centuries that have all been suppressed. Even the United States Patent Office suppresses patents that would set humanity free. That's why they suppress all the patents on free energy. And, you know, they've tried to suppress patents on anti-gravity technology and things like that. Why are they doing that? Because these are the technologies that can set humanity free, and they can't allow that to happen. So do you understand that the level of abundance and awakening that we're about to experience is going to make the world we once knew completely obsolete? And it's almost difficult to explain to people how you have to recalibrate your mind in order to grasp this, because you talk about free energy, you know, a lot of people translate that into the current realm. Like, you mean gas is going to be cheaper? No, I don't mean free gas. I mean free energy. I mean technology that gives you an unlimited stream of energy, of current in two wires that come out of this box, you know, whether doesn't even matter what tech is in the box, because there's a lot of different technologies that can do this. And whatever you want to do with those wires is up to you. You could charge your electric car. You could power your home. You could power Christmas tree lights, or you could put one wire in your mouth and the other wire in your ear and find out what happens. It's all up to you. Free energy gives you many options, not all of which are necessarily enjoyable, but that's to each his own. Oh, before we go on, let me mention today's sponsor. Dawson Knives has a new discount, and Dawson Knives is, they're incredible. Their blades, they're made in America. They have these incredible alloys. One's called CPM 3V, and another is called Magna Cut, that are corrosion resistant, but incredibly hard. Well, that's not even, I mean, they have the hardness factor, but they're also flexible. You can bend them and they snap back into shape, even though they're incredibly durable. So these are the characteristics that make really lifelong blades for knives, you know, survival knives, as well as machetes and swords. And I've got a couple of swords from these folks, and they're extraordinary. The best made swords and knives that I've ever seen in my life. They're all made in America. 15% off. Use the coupon code here, Prez Adams. Now, let me explain this. P-R-E-S Adams. Now, they don't mean like President Adams. What I think they meant this for President's Day. And then my name, Adams, but I didn't get to this on President's Day, so that's still the coupon code, Prez Adams, P-R-E-S Adams, all one word. Type that code in at DawsonKnives.com. You'll save 15%. And I don't know when that ends. It's good for a few more days. I would probably get your order in no later than this Friday. And I strongly recommend their blades, the swords that they have, self-defense, but also survival knives and different kinds of utility knives as well. Just incredible workmanship, let me tell you. And so getting back to the consciousness grenade concept here, think about this, okay? Let's look at what happened in Ottawa. And you know the activist there, Chris Skye, was talking about this, where people were being arrested by the fake police in Ottawa. And then they were being driven, I don't know, 15 or 20 kilometers outside of the city. And yes, for those of you in Canada, note that I use kilometers, even though I'm an American. That's just out of my respect for the Canadian people. Yes. 15 to 20 kilometers outside of Ottawa in the metric system. And then they were dropped off without any charges whatsoever. You know why? And everybody's starting to figure this out. Because those people were not police. They weren't law enforcement. They had no actual arrest powers. The whole thing was theater. And yes, they dressed them up, you know, as the big olive drab goons with the mask, and, you know, all that, marching through the streets like thugs with dark masks, probably breathing like Darth Vader. You know, doing the whole thing. It's all theater, folks. It's theater. It's designed to be an attack on your mind. To scare you into thinking that you're outnumbered. And the amazing realization in all of this, yeah, ask yourself this question. And this is a question that David brought up to me during our conversation. Why would they have to bring in troops from Europe if they already had enough police in Canada? Why would they bring troops from somewhere else? And the real answer is they don't have enough people in Canada who are willing to go along with the tyranny and physically assault and violently attack their own fellow citizens. That's why they can't find enough people to go along with the globalist agenda of mass enslavement and extermination of humanity. So they have to import them from somewhere else and then hide their faces behind masks and hide their badge numbers because they have no badges. Hide their names because their names are all foreign names, by the way, because they're from somewhere else. They're not even Canadian. And when you realize this, you realize it's all theater. CNN, pure theater, right? They're just making up fake news constantly and trying to pretend that it's real. The polls before elections, they're rigged. They're fake. They're trying to create the impression that a lot of people supported Joe Biden when almost nobody did. Who showed up for the Joe Biden rallies? It's like three or four people, you know, standing in those circles, huh? And nobody showed for Joe. They had to hide him in the basement the whole time. And not only is the present all theater, it's all staged, but so is the past, right? Because the past is the previous present, right? I mean, they were doing this in the present before. And that present became the past from our current point of view. Obviously, I mean, that's how time works. So everything that we've seen this entire time, all the big major events have all been faked. And so there's an article out there by Mary Maxwell, PhD. The title is Saying Good Night to False Flags and Good Morning to Open Thuggery. And she writes, and this is a really great article, she writes, it seems to me we've entered a new phase in government thuggery, referring to the smashing of the windshields of the Canadian truckers and the use of radiation weapons on the Canberra protesters in Australia. Remember the, what was it, the sonic weapon systems, the focused, energy weapons. The big boys apparently think they no longer have to pretend they are doing A when they're really doing B. They don't have to construct a false flag event and blame it on someone. They can just say, we did it. Hooray for us. Right on. This new thought that false flags are over and done with has caused me to review some of the big false flags. And by now, it's very easy to see their standard pattern. In fact, it's embarrassing. So she's going to go into the seven best false flag events here throughout history that most people have heard of. And here they are. The Oklahoma City bombing of the federal building, 1995. The Dunblane killing of children in Scotland in 1996. The Port Arthur massacre in Australia, 1996, also used to take away guns. The downing of the Twin Towers in New York, 9/11, right, 2001. The school shooting at Sandy Hook in Connecticut in 2012. The marathon bombing in Boston in 2013. And the Lindt Cafe hostage taking in Sydney in 2014. And if you look at each of these seven events, as Mary Maxwell explains, who was blamed for each event? So there's several questions. Bear with me on this because this is really incredible to understand all this. So who was blamed in each case? Well, like Timothy McVeigh, quote, extremist, or, you know, Osama bin Laden, a jihadist, or Adam Lanza, you know, a sad loner, or a terrorist, like the Tsarnaev brothers, that was Boston, and so on and so forth. So then she asks, how did the alleged bad guy get disposed of? Okay, Oklahoma City, McVeigh was executed. Dunblane, oh, Hamilton killed himself. Port Arthur, Bryant confessed and is still in jail. 9/11 event, oh, bin Laden was killed. Sandy Hook, Adam Lanza killed himself on the site. Boston bombing, oh, Tamerlane killed in custody. And Jahar still in prison. Sydney, Monis was shot dead by police at the scene. So interesting that most of them are dead, huh? So then she asked, who headed the respective nation at the time, okay? Oklahoma City event, Bill Clinton. Dunblane, UK Prime Minister John Major. Port Arthur event, oh, Australian Prime Minister John Howard. 9/11, George Bush. Sandy Hook, Barack Obama. Boston Marathon, Barack Obama. Again, Sydney Cafe, Prime Minister Tony Abbott of Australia. These are all globalists. And many of them are, of course, running the intelligence services or had been running them, like George Bush. Okay, then she asks, what new legislation resulted from each of these events? Oklahoma City, oh, the Anti-Terrorism and Effective Death Penalty Act of 1996. Of course, tyranny is always dressed up in the garb of anti-terrorism, right? Okay, following Dunblane, it was the Firearms Amendment Act of 1997. Port Arthur, the National Firearms Agreement of 1996 that, you know, took away everybody's guns. 9/11, the Patriot Act of 2001. Sandy Hook, Connecticut law against releasing autopsy photos of minors. Boston, let's see, smiles for the special administrative measures that prevent communicating with a terrorist in prison, okay? And then Sydney, eight tranches of national security legislation in 2015. So in each of these cases, as Dr. Maxwell writes, the government used these events in order to shore up their own power to surveil their citizens, to control their citizens, to disarm their citizens, and to criminalize their own citizens as potential terrorists. But all this time, through the 1990s and the 2000s and so on, the government had to first create the appearance of some kind of a terrorist event in order to then have the problem reaction solution, where the government is the solution. Oh, you need more government in your life. You need government to spy on you to make sure you're not doing anything bad. And then you're going to feel safe and secure after the government has scared you to death with these events. Right? So that was the model up until then. But now, as Dr. Maxwell is writing here, now they're not even bothering with the false flags. They're just coming out and having the thuggery right out in the open and saying, we're going to loot your bank accounts, which is what the Canadian government has said. We're going to smash your windows. We're going to hit you with energy weapons, and we're going to just brag about it. Oh, too bad for your face. Oh, does it feel like you're on fire? Yeah, that's the energy weapon. That's us. That's government. Yeah, we love you. Not really. Or did you see the tweets that came out from the Ottawa police? Like, we can't wait for them to feel the power of the jackboots or something like that. It's like, that was awesome, that maneuver with the horses. We got to figure out how to do that ourselves. We'd love to run over elderly people, you know, with walking sticks. Just trample them with giant war horses. Which is what they are, the Clydesdales. They're war horses, by the way. So I think Dr. Maxwell is correct here. Her observation is right on the money, that perhaps they don't need false flags anymore. All they need is emergencies. And then they can come out and just do their thuggery, just commit thuggery right out in the open and just say, well, we're the government. We're in charge. You have no power. And if you speak out against us, we'll arrest you as a terrorist and we'll throw you in a jail cell essentially forever. You'll have no right to anything, and we won't really give you a trial until we're good and ready for it. Just ask the January 6th political prisoners who are still being held in jails in the District of Columbia. And it's a blatantly illegal violation of their human rights and their legal rights and their due process. And yet, that's exactly what's happening. It's happening in America, and it's happening now in Canada as well. So I think this is where we are in the world. Maybe they don't need false flags. Maybe all they have to do is just say, we're the government, and if you don't like it, we're going to steal all your bank accounts, and we're going to shut you off from society and maybe just arrest you and just come steal everything from you. Did you hear the story about this guy that worked for Amazon? Did you see that story? This was a story by Grant Atkinson of the Western Journal. Feds seize family's assets without issuing a single charge, all because of Amazon's claims against the dad. So if you haven't seen this story, you're going to be amazed. And this was also reported by Reason Magazine, but Carl Nelson was working as a real estate transaction manager for Amazon, which I guess he was buying real estate so that Amazon can build fulfillment centers, I suppose. He lived with his wife, Amy Sterner Nelson, and their four daughters in a home in West Seattle. Then, let's see, the FBI suddenly seized nearly $1 million from them over an allegation. This is in April 2020. Federal agents arrived at the Nelsons' house to inform them that Amazon had accused Carl Nelson of not providing, quote, honest services. So Amazon alleged that Nelson provided extra benefits or deals for certain companies that in turn provided him illegal kickbacks. Nelson has denied the allegations, quote, that never happened, and it's exactly why I fought as long and as hard as I have, Nelson said. But the FBI did not need a conviction when they arrived at his family's residence. They seized $892,000 in funds from the family, so they looted their bank accounts. Amy Nelson said, we went from living a life where we were both working full time to provide for our four daughters to figuring out how we're going to make it month to month. It completely changed my belief in fairness. Oh, fairness. That's hilarious that you thought you lived in a world that was fair. Well, some lessons are very expensive, but the FBI seized funds that did not even come from Carl Nelson. They took money from nearly every corner of the Nelson's world, including the savings account of Amy Nelson that she had saved during her time working as an attorney. So last week, this is 2 years later, the FBI agreed to a settlement to return $525,000 to the Nelson family. And the rest of the money has gone to court fees, and they forfeited, I don't know, 100 grand or so. So the family's been forced to sell their house and car, liquidate retirement savings, move into Amy's sister's basement. They had to remove their four daughters from the Seattle school they attended. Almost 2 years after the FBI seizure, Amazon has still not levied a single criminal charge against Carl. Whoa. But there's a civil case that Amazon has brought against Carl, and that's apparently under in process. And Reason reported that Nelsons have become victims of a practice known as civil asset forfeiture. So the summary of this, and this gets to the open thuggery, is the FBI can come to your house, or they could probably just do this remotely. They can steal everything you have, everything that's electronic. You know, your bank accounts, checking, savings, corporate accounts, IRAs. They can just steal it, loot it all. They can force you to sell your home, sell your car, sell everything without even accusing you of a crime. The FBI can do this. And who is the FBI working for? Oh, Amazon. Amazon. And the allegation is that this guy was getting kickbacks on real estate deals. Well, where's the criminal complaint? Where's the criminal charge? Because a criminal charge would have evidence, huh? You know, something that due process requires evidence. No such thing. They didn't even serve them with a search warrant, from what I can tell. They just seized all their assets. This is the new thuggery. You don't have to be accused of a crime. Not in America, not in Canada. You can simply be said to have donated $10 to a trucker convoy. Or you can be accused of receiving a kickback on some property deal that your employer did not like. Just simply accused of doing so. And then your entire life is utterly destroyed by the thugs of the deep state. That's the world that we are in right now. And maybe Dr. Maxwell's right. Maybe they don't even need false flags anymore. They just steal everything. They just loot it. They don't offer any explanation. Say, good luck. We're the government. We just steal and loot and do whatever we want. What are you going to do about it? Oh, if you protest, then you're a terrorist, and then you'll be criminally charged. So you better not speak out. See how that works? But the reason they need such intimidation tactics, and I think the way governments are acting right now, with very desperately working to try to terrorize people psychologically, the reason they do this, it's kind of like, what was the movie? It was a while back. Tommy Lee Jones was the bad guy on a battleship. It was an old Steven Seagal movie back from the 90s, I think. And they had captured like all the Navy sailors there on the ship, I think it was. And they were marching them down the hallway. And the Tommy Lee Jones character said, if you talk, we're not only going to shoot you, we're going to shoot the person in front of you and the person behind you. So don't think that you're just risking your own life. We're going to destroy everybody around you if you talk. Well, that's pretty much what the governments of America and Canada are doing now, and Australia and New Zealand and so on, against their citizens. If you talk, we're going to destroy your entire life. We're going to steal the money from your wife, or, you know, we're going to destroy your children's lives. We're going to destroy everybody that you have any contact with. We're going to just steal everything. Why? Because we can. And there's nothing you can do about it. So this is why I've said the governments have become the terrorists, and the people of the world are waking up to this. But the upshot of this, or maybe the flip side, is that when the people of the world actually do at some point rise up with courage to dismantle all these systems, they're going to discover that they outnumber the evil actors 1,000 to 1, because the evil globalists actually don't have that many people on their side, because most of humanity is not evil. Most of humanity is not like raping children and in sex dungeons and doing all the things that these globalists do. Yeah, I mean, most people don't do that stuff. Thank God. You know, most people aren't having adrenochrome for breakfast in their Lucky Charms. You know, most people aren't looking at the box of the Lucky Charms and wanting to sexually assault the little Lucky Charms elf or whatever that creature is. You know, most people are not evil. Most people are not demonically possessed. Most people are not pedophiles. Thank God. And what that means is that if we had an open, fair fight, so to speak, of the good people of the world versus the evil people of the world, the evil people would be outnumbered hugely and they would go down quickly. And I do believe that day is coming, but until that day is coming, the evil people are trying to project the illusion that they are the majority, that they have all the power. Again, Wizard of Oz, they're pulling the levers, they're behind the curtains, they're projecting the holograms, they're putting out the psychological terrorism in the media. Be afraid, stay locked down, wear a mask, don't look at each other, don't talk to each other. All of this, and while you're at it, take a clot shot and just hurry up and die so that we can save money on Social Security expenses here at the government. Thank you very much. You've done your national duty by kicking the bucket early, right? I mean, that's the way the government thinks. They're just trying to mass murder everybody right now before people wake up. So it's a race. It's actually a race between the global awakening, which is accelerating, and the global extermination Holocaust effort, which is also accelerating. That's why these are the craziest or most interesting times in which any of us are ever going to live, probably. This epic, biblical, cosmic race between awakening and mass extermination. And those people who are late to the awakening, end up getting exterminated because they're taking booster shots. It's like, this is one case where you don't want to be the slowpoke in the group. You do want to hurry up and join the awakening. Reject the death shots. Reject the globalists. Join Team Humanity as we try to free human civilization from the grasp of Darth Vader. All right, now speaking of Darth Vader, we had a story about Bill Gates. This is from newspunch.com. Bill Gates linked lab developing vaccine that spreads like a virus to vaccinate anti-vaxxers. Now, what this is referring to is what we call a self-spreading vaccine. Now, we've covered this maybe, 2 years ago or something. We covered this. I've even covered it in stories on naturalnews.com. Self-spreading vaccines was one of the, I think it was the 10 key technologies that were being proposed by some globalist group. We published a chart on this. I don't recall where it is. But I do remember self-spreading vaccines was one of the technologies. Another one was mobile DNA sequencing and detection instruments that could be put onto drones so that basically they could have PCR instruments on drones and they could fly around your neighborhood and sniff your DNA or sniff the DNA of anything that's in the air. And then they could say, oh my God, there's been, a virus has been detected in your neighborhood. You've been selected to go to the special concentration camp. And, all the laws in New York and California and Washington State and places like Canada and so on, the laws are written so that if they suspect you might have been exposed to a pathogen, then you can be rounded up against your will and thrown into a COVID death camp. If you read the laws, that's what they all say. And by the way, there are also laws on the books in America, like CDC regulations. I guess they're not laws, they're CDC guidelines. That's on the books in America. So what they could do with this technology is just fly drones around and then turn up the cycle threshold on the onboard PCR instruments until they can sniff out whatever they're looking for. Oh my God, your neighborhood has Ebola. How did that happen? Oh, you're all ordered to evacuate. Here, we have a bus here for you. Just hop on the convenient bus and you'll be taken to a nice, comfortable location where you won't have to worry about anything. Well, you'll be turned into Soylent Green in no time. Trust us, it's a totally painless process. And it'll be good for the earth too, Seriously, this is what they're doing. So anyway, getting back to the story. Well, there are other technologies that were mentioned in that paper. But getting back to the Bill Gates story. So they're developing a needleless vaccine. So no needles. And the vaccine spreads like a virus. Meaning that people will, quote, catch the vaccine like they would catch the flu, but no needles are required. So this is basically a death weapon. This is a global viral or nanoparticle death ray kind of thing. I mean, not an actual ray, but, like a death bomb type of technology. It's being subsidized by the National Institutes of Health, the NIH. Of course, but of course. You know, probably Fauci money at the NIAID as well. And this is all covered in a paper. The paper, DHSC paper, says, quote, self-spreading vaccines are less lethal, but not non-lethal. They can still kill. What? Some people who die who would otherwise have lived, no, some people will die who would otherwise have lived, though fewer people will die overall. Oh, how, what a relief. The other issue is there's no consent for vaccination from the majority of patients. Yeah, because it's a stealth, self-spreading vaccine where you have no choice. You can't say no because it spreads to you. It's, you know how we have shedding of the spike protein right now? That's kind of what this is, but instead of shedding, it's spreading. It's like, I mean, we already have self-shedding vaccines. We're about to have self-spreading vaccines. That's even worse. So people are going to dump all over you. You know, like you probably have a relative or a friend who's going to, oh, I love these vaccines. They're going to go get injected, you know, and then they're going to spread it to other people around them. Professor Dominic Wilkinson, a medical ethics specialist at Oxford University, says, quote, nobody is asked whether they give consent. Instead, we entrust elected officials to examine the likely health benefits and make decisions based on the evidence. I don't think that there is anything intrinsically different when it comes to the idea of self-spreading vaccines. Okay, I'm not sure what he's saying, but Dr. Philippa Lentzos, a lecturer in science at the International Security, I'm sorry, a lecturer in science and international security at King's College London, says, whoa, quote, such a self-spreading weapon may prove uncontrollable and irreversible. Yeah, that's the point. That's the whole point of why Bill Gates is funding this. It's supposed to be uncontrollable and irreversible. It's supposed to spread and infect human beings. It's supposed to achieve depopulation, obviously. So, you know, just wanted you to know that technology is being, you know, openly worked on and openly talked about. And they're very proud of this technology again, because this is just the showcasing of medical thuggery now, just like government thuggery, where the government no longer has to have an excuse. Ah, we just looted your bank account. Yeah, where the government in medicine are like, yeah, we just infected you with our vaccines and there's nothing you can do about it. Yeah, we just murdered you or someone you know with a ventilator. Yeah, we got paid. What are you going to do about it? We have legal immunity because it's a national emergency, you see. Oh, it's an emergency. So what, all logic and reason and morality is thrown out the window because someone declared an emergency? Yeah, that's why they're doing the permanent emergency. That's the goal, permanent emergency. All right, so now you know why Biden wants to create a bigger emergency in America and why Trudeau wants a bigger emergency. All these national governments now, they want big emergencies so they can get away with all this stuff. All right. We're going to switch topics here, go into the collapse of the world energy supply. Now, we have an interesting take on things from a Russian point of view. This is from the Russian news agency TASS, which, of course, is pretty heavy with Russian propaganda, right? I mean, they're kind of like the mouthpiece of the Russian intelligence community in the same way that the Washington Post is the mouthpiece of the American intelligence community. But it's still interesting what they've said. So they've got an expert here, Dmitry Marinchenko. And he said that, essentially, he said if Western sanctions, I'm reading this from coverage of the TASS press release, if Western sanctions lead to Russia's oil exports being cut off, then the world is going to have an energy market collapse. This was stated by, it says here, by an American rating agency, Fitch. Really? Oh, okay. So Fitch said that. And then this Russian news agency, TASS, Dmitry Marinchenko, he said that if there's no further escalation in Ukraine, oil prices should level off. But if there's a ramping up of tensions, it could be a total disaster. He said, quote, If everything goes according to the calmest scenario, which implies no further escalation, minimal sanctions that do not affect the oil and gas sector, and the freezing of the conflict, then this geopolitical surplus will come to naught. But in a more pessimistic scenario, where Western nations impose sanctions on Russia's energy sector, Marinchenko suggested that the price of oil would exceed $100 per barrel, and this would result in an energy crisis. And then the analyst from Fitch said that no other nation can replace Moscow's exportation of natural resources. Quote, Russia's share in the world oil market is more than 10%. There's nothing to replace it. There's little free capacity. So the White House is trying to put sanctions on Russia right now over the, the moves in the breakaway regions of, Donetsk and Luhansk there, southeastern Ukraine. But the problem is that if the White House, if they formulate sanctions that hit Russia's energy exports, then it's going to be reflected in skyrocketing gas prices at the gas pumps across America, just as we're moving into the midterm election season. Now, can you imagine what's going to happen to the Democrats in the House and the Senate if gasoline is like $7 a gallon by, August, or $8 or $9? I mean, in California, it could be $10 a gallon. So it's kind of, in a way, kind of funny where Biden's like, oh, we're going to punish you, Russia. We're going to punish you so bad. But not your energy, because we don't want to get clobbered in the elections, right? And Russia's just laughing the whole time. Like, yeah, Putin's probably thinking, yeah, Biden's my little energy bitch. He just buys whatever we have because you need it, don't you? You just need it. Same thing with Merkel in Germany. You need the energy, don't you? What, you think you're just going to freeze to death and have no fertilizer and no food? Yeah, you're going to come running to Daddy Putin for some more energy, aren't you, in no time? But, in America, the Democrats can't have high gas prices because that's the one thing that, well, I guess there are a couple things, but that's one of the main things that everybody has to buy, typically. Most people buy gas. And so they therefore notice when gas prices go up. Even the most clueless leftist liberal who thinks that Biden's awesome, who watches CNN, is totally oblivious to the world. Even they will look at the gas prices like, whoa, that sure went up fast. What's going on? Even they will start to question the reality when they're paying $7 a gallon. And the other thing that people notice, of course, is food inflation. And that's going to get worse, too. We're going to talk about here in a second because of the situation in Ukraine. So you think about, Biden, well, his handlers, Obama, et cetera, are really in a very difficult spot. Almost feel sorry for him, They painted themselves into such a horrible corner. They really have no leverage against Russia or really leverage in Ukraine because everything they try to do is going to make food prices go higher and gas prices go higher, and they're going to get absolutely clobbered in the elections. Hence the need to cancel the elections in any way possible. And that's part of the effort that's underway as well. But kind of in the same way that the leaders of Germany are like hammering themselves in the face. Like, oh, Putin, you must hurt so bad. As they're slamming themselves, like they're bloodying their own faces in Germany. We have no food. We are freezing. Gas prices have doubled. Have you had enough yet, Putin? Otherwise, we're going to continue, right? That's going to be happening in America, where Biden's going to be like beating his own face with a sledgehammer. Oh my God, our food prices have doubled. Our gas prices have doubled. Putin, have you had enough yet? No? Well, we're going to double again and keep pounding, pounding, pounding. It's like a cartoon. It's like watching, institutionalized mentally ill psychopaths. Like what they would do if you gave them a hammer, Like they're in a padded room with nothing to do, but oh, here's a hammer. And they just start beating themselves in the face with a hammer. This is what our national leaders are like. And they think that Putin is being, punished by this. Putin's just laughing his ass off. Trust me. Putin's like, you just keep hammering your face as long as you want. Our gas in Russia is very affordable. Our food is affordable. Our people aren't starving to death or freezing to death. Well, most of them aren't anyway. I mean, because they've kept prices under control. So I don't know. We are ruled by insane criminal psychopaths who, frankly, I mean, need to be institutionalized, or I don't know. Should we just prosecute them for the crimes against humanity and then also offer them mental health treatment or something? Should we bring back, what was it called? Electroshock therapy. Yeah. Should we bring back electroshock? I mean, no, that's pretty cruel. That's not a good thing. Governments use that against people. You know, they would say, oh, you're crazy. And then they would give you electroshock therapy as a treatment, you know, and it would fry your brain. And then you would act crazy. And then they would say, see how crazy you are? That's the history of electroshock therapy, by the way. So no, I don't want to bring that back. That's too cruel. Would be less cruel. You know what would be appropriate though? How about we take all these criminals who push vaccines on everybody else, and as they are found guilty by the war crimes tribunals, you just make them take a never-ending course of clot shots themselves, right? Wouldn't that be appropriate? They said that everybody else could take them. Maybe you should take them, because there's going to be a lot of vaccines left over that never got administered, you know, billions of them probably, because they've been mass producing these and now people are waking up. It's like, no, thank you. So they're going to have billions of vaccines. What are we going to do with them? I think we figured out a way to dispose of them. Put them into the bodies of the people who are guilty of the vaccine crimes. It makes perfect sense. It's karmic. It's almost divine. You know, and you even explain it to them. Well, if it's safe, like you said, you shouldn't mind it. But, you know, they'll be screwed. No, no, no more shots. We know what's in that. Like, it's enough graphene oxide. No. Like, no, but you said it was safe for children. You said 5-year-olds can take unlimited shots. Yeah. Karma's a bitch, isn't it? You know, when it comes back to the people who committed real deep evil and then they get hit with it. It's like, sometimes you just laugh because you're like, well, kind of had it coming to yourself, didn't you? All right, next we're going to talk about the minerals of Ukraine. But first, people have asked me, I've had comments from people like, you do a lot of different voices in your podcasts. And some people ask me like, where did you learn to do the voices, or why are you doing this? And I realized the other day that this podcast is basically like an hour plus of improv. That's what it is. I mean, I've got notes of some news headlines and things that I think are really important, but the rest of it, you know, it's unscripted, obviously. So it's kind of improv. And I do have quite a complex sense of humor. Some people might call it twisted. That's okay. I can live with that. But I used to train in comedy improv. Not everybody knows this about me, but when I lived in a different city, we'll just say, I actually trained in comedy improv with an improv group for a couple of years. And this was maybe, I'm trying to figure out, it was about 15 to 16 years ago, I think, something like that. And I loved it. I used to go in, I think it was like two nights a week, and we would do a couple hours of improv. And the instructor would teach us all these scenarios. And the instructor, by the way, is a former cast member on Saturday Night Live. And I'm not even going to mention who that is, because I don't want to get them in trouble. But we were taught comedy routines that today would be considered incredibly racist and insensitive. But our instructor was a woman from Saturday Night Live, because 15 years ago, it was more acceptable to do comedy that would mock the funniest parts of different ethnicities. I'm serious. This was what we were taught. We were actively encouraged to do different kinds of voices in the middle of improv sets. And by the way, it would span everything from, you know, British. Actually, our instructor would yell out in the middle of a set. It would be myself and a couple other improv actors on stage, and we'd be doing a bit, and she'd yell out, British, you know, and then you got to go into British, and she'd yell out, Indian, and then you got to go to Bombay and do that, and then she would yell out, like, Texas, and you got to go into a Texas accent. Or it could be, you know, Long Island, and then you got to talk like you need some Long Island coffee and all this. And so we did all these different things. We learned all these different accents and delivery things that you could never learn today because it would be considered racist. Totally, totally racist. Cause, you know, she would yell out, you know, like Indian, and you know, you'd be on stage. Okay, okay, thank you. I'm your doctor from Bombay. It's nice to meet you, sir. You know, and you would do the Indian accent, right? And none of us, like nobody in that class was racist against Indian people. And we had people of different ethnicities. We had like Hispanic people. We had black people. We had, I don't know, all kinds of different people in class. None of this was considered racist. It was considered comedy. Just comedy. You know, she'd yell out, Texas, and then you have to go, well, there, howdy, partner. Oh, my dogs are barking, and I'm just getting old. You know, and you do your Texas thing. You're not mocking Texans. You're just doing improv with, like, the most hilarious parts of what the common person would think is Texas culture. You know, or, you know, they yell out, you know, Scottish, and you'd have to try to go in your best Scottish accent and say something usually involving some kind of sexual activity with sheep, it turns out, in that genre, or, you know, anything. So we were actually taught, or like German, you know, the instructor would yell out German, and you'd have to go into, usually it was like the worst mockery of a Nazi German kind of thing, like, and you know, like everybody suddenly became Hitler on stage, you know? And of course it was very, like today it would be called mean towards Germans. But again, this was, we mocked everybody equally. Today you could never have that class. And one of the funniest bits was, and again, I didn't come up with this, okay? Our instructor came up with this. It was the funniest bit was the Hispanic news reporter for a local TV station. And have you ever been listening to local news and, you know, a Hispanic reporter comes on and they speak in perfect English, like, you know, yes, this is Michelle from ABC News, Eyewitness 5, here on scene at the traffic accident, right? And they're speaking just like any other American. And then at the end of their bit, they say their name. And their name is the longest, most insane, like heavy, heavy Mexican accent that you can imagine. And it's just kind of funny sounding. Like this was one of the bits. So I was like, oh, this is Maria, you know, Channel 5 here looking at the traffic accident. That's right. Two fatalities. And now, reporting for Channel 5, this is Maria Papilla Rosaria Igualmente Hernandez Lopez signing off, you know, and you're like, what? What was that? That was one of the bits that was in our improv comedy, which again, is not a racist thing. It was comedy. You know, in America, you used to be able to laugh. And this is why many of the comedians today are so freaked out, you know, about cancel culture. Even Bill Maher is freaked out about it. Like the comedians can't, you know, they can't joke about anything. Now somebody's offended. Well, I just decided I'm going to joke anyway. I'm going to do improv anyway, but I'm going to do it mixed in with the news of the day. So that's actually where I learned to do a lot of the voices was in this comedy improv class. It was a pretty wild thing. So all kinds, and some of it was physical comedy too, obviously, which doesn't work in a podcast, but we had a lot of physical comedy as well. And then we had like public performances where you would do improv. And someone from the audience would, you know, you'd have to get suggestions from them of what to do. And you've probably seen, like the TV shows. What's that guy's name? Drew something. You know, the improv TV shows, you have to think of a song. just out of the blue and make up a rhyme, or you have, you know, 1 minute to make up a rhyme and make up a song. And we had to do that too. And for the most part, we all sucked because improv is hard. That's the truth. Improv is very, very hard. But today I have the advantage of being able to hit pause in this podcast or even editing something. So, there are times where I am doing something here and then this funny concept comes into my head and I'll record it here. And then sometimes I'll pause it and go, wait a second, I think I could have done that better. And then I'll redo it and my editor will just use the second take. Or sometimes I'll do a bit here. Like yesterday I was talking about, Klaus Schwab claiming that we're going to, we all penetrate his cabinets, right? And I said, it's like some dude raping a credenza. That, you know, that was just a spontaneous thing that came to me. But then later after the podcast, it popped into my head. What would have been funnier was if I followed that up with a voice of like a police thug man who entered the scene and said, sir, we don't know what you're doing, but step away from the furniture. Show us your hands. Show us your hands, sir. You know, something like that. Sometimes I get ideas later that I think would have been funnier, but by then it's too late to get it into the podcast, you know, so I'll just share it with you like this. Or what was the story the other day about the cross-country skier who had the frozen penis after, what was it, 30 kilometers in the wind and snow and freezing temperatures of China, somewhere in China? I thought, you know, the funniest way to answer that would have been, didn't somebody tell the guy that in cross-country skiing, you're supposed to put your penis in your pants? Like, that would have been the funniest answer right there. Because, you know, it creates the visual of a guy freestyling it cross-country with it out. Like, dude! So, comedy is an element of what I do. Because I think sometimes humor is, you know, it is the best medicine in some ways, but it's also the way for us to deal with the insanity of what we're all living through. We're living through crazy times. And for the record, to be able to mock ourselves or people of different nationalities or having different habits or whatever, that is not condescending. It is just, it's the universal recognition that all of us human beings, we are funny people. We are funny in the way we do things. We are funny sometimes in the way we talk. We are funny in the cultural differences or the lost in translation moments when we get something wrong, you know? It can be funny. And then some of the accents I learned from living, you know, living in Asia. So when I do like a Chinese comedy accent, like, oh, we're gonna turn back on the anal swab. That's so much of fun. We're gonna do that in Beijing again. You know, like that. I'm not, it's comedy. Again, it's comedy. And I make fun of Texas and I make fun of white people sometimes. Remember that? Like, what do you call it if you walk into a movie theater that's full of 100% white people? Saltine cinema, you know? Like that. That was in response to, you know, Joe Rogan's comment about a theater full of black people, which I thought, you know, we should joke about a theater full of white people. What do you call that? But I will joke about myself. I will joke about my own race or my own ethnicity and about others as well. And that's because I consider us all to be human beings. I consider us all to be brothers and sisters. We're all in this fight for humanity together. It's the left that wants to divide people and not allow us to laugh with each other. And there's no more angry person in the world than a radical left-wing transgender activist. They're just like, ah, they hate the whole world, you know? It's ma'am, you know? They just hate the whole world. It's like, chill out, crazy whatever you are, just chill. You know? I mean, we don't care, really, that you think you're a woman. Just treat people with basic politeness out in public, and you want to joke about your experiences, you know, on your own podcast or video, go for it. Maybe you're funny. I mean, you think you're a woman. That's a pretty good starting point for some comedy right there. You could probably roll with that. One of the other characters that we were taught to do is a Valley Guy. And there's Valley Girl and Valley Guy, but Valley Guy is like,
like, man, it's so awesome, you know, and I never really realized how much that was gonna,
you know, you go, it's like California stoner, basically.
Dude, that's so awesome.
Or Valley Girl, you just throw the word like in every other word, which makes you sound like Ocasio-Cortez. So you just go,
and she was like, that was like awesome. It's so amazing. And like I said, like, what do you like want to do?
And, you know, that's, so there's a lot of different characters that are American characters, you know, because America has all these different cultures and interesting people. And Texas is always fun. And, oh, and we did Australia as well, which almost always involved the newbie improv people talking about wallabies and barbecue, right? You know, the inevitable comment, throw another shrimp on the barbie. And this is pretty much, we're going, we are hunting wallabies again for some reason. It's like the only things that, the only thing Americans know about Australia is there's kangaroos and barbecues. So it was kind of pathetic at times to, you know, to see people's lack of global knowledge. It was funny. Oh yeah. And of course we would do French characters. So the French character was always this horrible snob, you know, it's like, you must think you are something special. I assure you, monsieur, you are not. You know, it would just be like some combination of South Park and bad French accents or whatever. So we would mock everybody equally, you know, it's comedy. Now the instructor would yell out, Swedish, you know, we are the special people from Sweden. You just endless, really. So that's my true story about training for this. There's actual training for doing different voices. And I'm not even joking. If I had to do this all over again, and if somebody said, okay, you can't be the Health Ranger, what would you do instead? You know what I would want to do? Really? I'm not even joking. I would have liked to be a voice actor because I think it would just be so much fun. I might not know anything about smoothies at that, you know, in that other parallel life or anthocyanins or anything. Might be all fat living on McDonald's, but I'd be a voice actor and it would be fun. And why not? If you can enjoy what you do in your life, right? I mean, go for it. I mean, as long as it's ethical and moral and honest, you're not hurting anybody else. Being a voice actor, it's a pretty honest job. That's kind of like the dream job right there. But you know, then there's the counter voice. You can't be a voice actor. All the good voice acting jobs are already taken. What's going through your head, you crazy person? You know, that's the, you know, the South Park, version there, but whatever. Just sharing a little personal side with you here so you know, like how these situation update podcasts come to be. And this is the true story. But by the way, one more comment and then I'll move on. Even in the class, the comedy improv class that I took, there was never a time when the instructor yelled out something like black. Like there was never a black ethnicity comedy style that was taught for obvious reasons. Because, you know, in America, that would have been considered like racist, crazy, insensitive stuff, even, you know, 15, 16 years ago. But it was okay at the time to do Indian and Irish and Italian and German and Japanese. And every time they yell out Japanese, it always became like a horrible samurai mistranslation movie. And you know, it was pretty crazy at times, but everybody laughed. And for the most part, the public never saw any of this stuff. Thank God there are no videos of any of this. And we all learned a little bit something about ourselves and each other. And I actually think that learning comedy about different ethnicities ultimately teaches you something about the world, especially when you watch others doing comedy about your ethnicity. That's just as funny. You find out, you know, how the world sees you, and you realize we're all in this giant comedy theater together called Planet Earth. And it is, you know, it's half comedy, half tragedy. But if you're willing to look at it from a funny perspective, you might just be able to keep your sanity intact as you go through it. That's all I'm saying. And by the way, some of the top scientists throughout history were pretty funny people, like the physicist Feynman, for example, you know, hilarious guy. Having a sense of humor is a sign of intelligence. It's true. Okay, yesterday we talked about the minerals of Ukraine, and I just want to give you an update on that. Some more research. Turns out that if there's more conflict in Ukraine, aluminum, copper, cobalt, and nickel are all going to go up in price. Now, aluminum and copper are the metals that are used to make electrical wiring for both residential and commercial applications. So this is going to mean home prices will go even higher, or construction prices, as well as commercial construction. And, of course, aluminum is used in all kinds of things, from aircraft and vehicles and so on. So everything's going to go up in price if the Ukraine situation, you know, becomes worse. Cobalt and nickel. Well, cobalt is used in batteries, by the way. And nickel is used, of course, in a lot of industrial processes. All kinds of different alloys use nickel, certain amount of nickel in batteries as well. In fact, I looked at electric vehicle batteries. Did you know that over 50% of the cost of the battery is found in the cathode? And the cathode contains lithium, nickel, cobalt, and manganese. Right, mostly lithium. And there's a lot of lithium available in Ukraine, but also cobalt and copper, like I said. So when you're looking at the world of future economies and a lot of electric vehicles and even electric powered airplanes and personal, you know, personal drones that you can ride in, because they're working on those too. I mean, some of those I've seen in prototypes fly. I mean, in videos. They're all going to use a lot of copper, a lot of lithium for the batteries, a lot of aluminum for the frame and the safety features and so on. So all those are going to get a lot more expensive. But the food supply is also threatened. And there was a story from the Epoch Times says that the Russia-Ukraine crisis is threatening the global food supply of wheat and corn, and supply disruptions are anticipated. Now, this is kind of a shocking analysis. It says that Russia and Ukraine, in combination, they provide about 80% of the world's sunflower oil exports. Did you know that? 29% of the world's wheat exports and 19% of the global supply of corn. I did not know that. So the Epoch Times says the shortage of wheat and corn would be problematic, as these are staple foods in many countries. 14 nations depend on Ukraine for more than 10% of their wheat consumption. A lot of those nations are in the Middle East, by the way. Lebanon imports 50% of its wheat from Ukraine. Libya, 43%. Malaysia, 28%. That's interesting. It's a long way to cart your wheat. Indonesia, 28%. Wow. Let's see. Bangladesh, 21%. Egypt, 14%. So, you know, Ukraine is feeding the world. One reason why it's important to maintain stability there. Grain exports from Ukraine hit 56 million tons in the last year, it says. And most of those exports go through two ports in the Black Sea. And I think one of those ports is Odessa. And the Black Sea may experience disruptions in case of a military conflict. Well, of course it will. Because I think, is it the Donetsk region? That's at the very southeastern tip of Ukraine. I think that's on the Black Sea. And I think there's a port right there. A smaller port than Odessa, but a port nonetheless. Quote, ships are avoiding entering the Black Sea because of the war risks, says a trader from Singapore, told Reuters. Supply disruptions are already taking place, says Nikolai Gorbachev, head of the Ukrainian Grain Association. I'd like to have a name like Gorbachev. Like, no. I mean, I know there's a lot of Gorbachevs, but Americans only know one. He believes a blockage of corn and wheat exports from the Black Sea region could result in corn and wheat prices spiking by 20 to 30%. And then finally, another crop affected by this is soybeans. So soybeans and corn tend to compete for the same agricultural land. So higher corn and soybean prices will affect packaged products that contain these items. So think about what I said earlier, where Joe Biden wants to punish Russia, but he doesn't want the Democrats to get politically slaughtered because people are going to the grocery store or the gas station and seeing prices spiking 30, 40, 50%. So it's kind of like the only way to keep prices low and stable is to have no war, which should be what we want anyway. So let me just say, as I wrap this up here today, I know we're already kind of long. Let us pray that cooler heads prevail. All of us, I mean, you and I for sure, we want no war. We want stability and peace in the world. And that means ultimately we've got to get rid or dismantle these insane lunatic psychopaths who are running our nations, who answer only to globalists or Satan. They don't answer to the people. They will always drive us to war. If we ever want to have peace, if we ever want to have freedom, if we ever want to have affordable food, we've got to dismantle these evil globalist cabals. And then we can have that golden age, you know, economic abundance that I've been talking about. But until that day comes, these globalists are going to put us through hell. They're going to start wars. And they're going to murder innocent people. They're doing it with the vaccines. They're doing it with a weaponized food supply. They're doing it with the pesticides and the GMOs and everything. And they're going to create food scarcity as a weapon against humanity. Food scarcity is the next weapon on their list. And they've got others too, you know, like biological weapons. And of course, cyber attacks against financial infrastructures, the great financial reset, debt implosion, and many other weapons as well. So here we are. This is why we have to laugh a little bit. Otherwise, the reality of the situation can be pretty doom and gloom. So the upshot of all this is be prepared for more skyrocketing food prices. It's going to get, it's going to get worse. Unfortunately, that's the situation that we're in. So that's my wrap up for today. And, you know, thank you for your patience. And thank you for listening to my personal story about comedy improv, but I've had a lot of people asking me that question, so I thought I would share that with you. And if you ever want to have fun with a group of people and make yourself look like a complete fool, try to do hilarious accents from all the different regions of the world, because it's hard, actually. it's harder than it sounds, and you know, sooner or later somebody's going to call you a racist these days just for trying it. So good luck. Good luck with that. Oh, what a world. In the meantime, I want to wish you blessings and thank you for your support of healthrangerstore.com. And I'll be back with you tomorrow with another update. And we'll see what happens between now and then, what kind of news is breaking, you know, the whole deal. Thank you for listening today. Check out more podcasts. I've got special reports going up on brighteon.com. And of course, check out my articles each day on naturalnews.com. Thank you for listening. God bless. Take care.